Reading FC very smartly recovered from their absolute shocker against Wigan in midweek by notching a 2-0 win against Barnsley on Saturday, obviously keeping our podcast published times in mind for how they go about their business. Welcome to episode 223 of the Tyler Sten podcast, and your familiar host of Mark Mayer is back in the chair this week after an unfortunate bout of illness, not the kind that you've been reading about in the newspapers, struck me down last week. So thank you very much, Ollie, for popping on and hosting. And I'm back this week in my usual state of ignorance because I've also been away the weekend pretty much up until now. So I'm approaching this podcast from a position of, I suppose, devil's advocate, you could say, and the absolute perfect person on the other end of the phone line to tell me all about what's happened over the last few days is Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tyler Sten. How's it going, mate?
Hello, thanks for having me. Good mood, actually, after a win. Reading's first home win of the decade, in fact. Kind of something that we hadn't really got used to in the last couple of weeks and months, but really good to finally have a win to cheer on a Saturday.
Yeah, I think it was a really interesting sort of scenario to go from so bad to what was actually seemed like a relatively stress-free afternoon against Barnsley. So we'll talk about that more in a minute. And before we do that, as ever, thank you very much to Zeti the Film, who are sponsoring the podcast this season. Sim is, at least, is coming loud and clear through our new little toy that hopefully I'll have set up for the next show. And also a big thank you to our listeners and those listeners who put their hand in their pocket for the Patreon campaign. That's always up and running on the website. If you want to contribute and donate any spare change you have, that's always massively appreciated. And we always try and put it into a good cause and to improve the show and everything. And any details for that are on the article that goes up with the podcast, which you can take in a variety of ways, which hopefully you are on Spotify or iTunes or any such thing. So without further ado, let's go on to the recap then and talk about two very, very different games of football.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, Sim, let's talk about Barnsley first. Let's start with the more recent, the more positive news. And this, as I say, I'm approaching this from a full devil's advocate point of view. And the first thing that really struck me in the highlights package for this game was that first goal is one of the most unusual goals I've seen at the Medeski Stadium in a long time. A sort of free kick that gets a little touch, and then it's almost as if the Barnsley defenders they didn't fancy clearing it, or every flailing limb was always just out of reach to clear it out, and Yaku Mate gets the opener. Then George Puskas pops up with a very decent second. Really, my question on that, I suppose, very decent second is really the question. Was there kind of an element of luck to these goals? Should we really be taking them as really important moments in the season, or was it just actually a bit of a moment when the ball bounced well for us and we finally took advantage?
Well, the first one was an absolutely jammy goal, basically. Obviously, Puskas will come away with an assist for it, but I'm not entirely sure how. It seems to kind of bounce off him and then bounce off Mate and go into the net. But when you have someone with such a good set-piece delivery as John Swift, you can really whip it in with such venom and such accuracy. You give yourself a chance of scoring those kind of goals. And we've talked so many times before about scrappy goals that Reading have conceded that have really changed the course of a game or killed us off in a game or something like that. But when you have those moments of quality, when you have someone like Swift who, even if he isn't playing at his best, he can still come up with those moments, then you always give yourself a chance. And it really was a decisive moment in the game. I don't think Reading were anything like at their best on the afternoon at all. But when you get those little moments, you don't need to be at your best. You just need to just get the lead and hold on to it. And in the case of the Puskas goal, actually, as it happens, I'm writing about it this evening and hopefully can have some more in-depth thoughts on it. But the thing about that kind of goal is it's a really intelligent, well-worked individual goal from Puskas. And I don't really think it's the kind of goal that anyone else in the squad could have scored. It requires a mixture of kind of being able to pick up the space in front of the defender, being able to spin around them and then accelerate passing the space and and obviously get the finish. And it's a really encouraging sign for Puskás that he's able to, that he has the confidence to try something like that, and he has the ability and the quality to pull it off. And all in all, it's now 3 goals in 4 games for him, obviously the assist as well for Mate earlier on in the game, and it looks like he's finally starting to build up a little bit of steam.
Do we think with the Barnsley game that were Barnsley effectively the sort of opposition that we always hoped, maybe the opposition we hoped Wigan were going to be? Did they turn up as a team that, you know, had a game plan that we were going to be, you know, exploited by from the Wigan game? We'll talk about it a bit more in depth as to what exactly went wrong later on. But from what went right for them was the fact that Wigan, you know, just came and shut us down and pressed us and did a good job and really targeted the right men. Did Barnsley actually come with a solid game plan, or were they just kind of, you know, your standard middle of the road relegation battling sort of League One / sort of Championship sort of team?
That actually came with a really interesting idea. Actually, they were pressing us quite high. I think higher than Wigan were. Actually, I think it might well have been a 4-3-3 from Barnsley, but don't quote me on that. They were pressing quite high. They're trying to cause problems at the back, and it meant Reading had to play through them basically. But when they did, there was space in behind Barnsley to try and get at that back four, and it's not something we really did particularly well in, even in the first half when we were a little bit more fluent. But certainly that game plan is something that could have gone well for Barnsley, but I think we countered it quite well. But again, I think you come back to the point of those key moments. If Barnsley had taken some of the really good chances they actually had in the first half, then maybe we could have had a similarly negative game again that we did against Wigan. The performance was better from our point of view, but still we had to rely on kind of coming on top in those key moments. Raphael pulled off a couple of really important saves. Michael Morrison gave the ball away really poorly in the first half. And it's those little things that if they go a little bit differently, then we could well have had a very negative game against Barnsley as well.
Were you satisfied with the team when it got announced? We've had, I think it was that 5 changes, basically. Liam Moore was one of the players dropped out after the Wigan game. Omar Richards, Pele, Felipe Araruna and Sam Baldock all taken out, which I think if you, Pele aside, none of the other players have really had any kind of form over the last few weeks. Was it the right level of overhaul that Mark Boehm put in for this Barnsley game? Because the temptation after such a Wigan howler, you know, you want to change everyone, or you want to make sure every single player is doing something differently. Do you think he actually kind of struck the right balance with that? But, you know, with, I think Liam Moore being taken out, as I've not seen, correct me if I'm wrong, I've not seen any injury news or anything like that about him. But for a headline move to take him out, and Matt Miazga's a very good Championship centre-back to come in, that seems to me like a good balance, a good mix of you know, freshening things up.
Well, they said about Moore after the Barnsley team news came out that he was ill, but it's the kind of thing where maybe he was ill, maybe he wasn't. When you look at that third goal that Wigan scored last week and how slow he was to react to it, how he didn't close him down, it's the kind of thing that Boehm might well have really laid into him for. And
especially as a captain doing that, you know.
Exactly. It sets a really poor example. And I don't want to say it definitely was a case of he was dropped and they just said he was ill, but it's a possibility, basically. Otherwise, the changes I thought were about right. As you say, it wasn't too many changes just for the sake of it. You don't want to make 11 changes just as an overreaction to the Wigan game, essentially. It was about freshening up the side, particularly in bringing in Renamota and Elise, who've been bright in the last couple of weeks, did well against Wednesday, for example. Bringing them back in was important. Miazga obviously adds quality. Puskás has scored a few goals recently. But just as important as the personnel was changing the system. The thing about the Wigan game is that we started in kind of a 4-4-2. It was too flat. It was too uninventive. Didn't have enough options in the midfield. And actually, even with having wingers, we didn't have very much width. Araruna and Ajari weren't particularly well suited to that. So Boehm was right to change to, it's kind of more of a 4-3-3 against Barnsley. I was thinking it might have been a 4-2-3-1, but it was actually, I think, closer to a 4-3-3. Allowed us to play through the lines that little bit more, got support to the striker pretty well, and generally gave us more width than against Wigan. Although obviously that was a low bar in terms of tactical performance, but on the whole, right changes wasn't such a brilliant improvement that it was fine and dandy across the board. But he did what he needed to do from Bowen's point of view, and luckily it paid off.
Well, I think a brilliant improvement would have almost been a bit not necessarily the thing you really want, because you do want teams to be more consistent. And I suppose the consistency of not being brilliant is in some way sign of a team that, you know, is a bit less flaky. Because if you have a team that goes from being brilliant to being awful, you really do worry about their sort of mental state. Whereas if they nudge out of awfulness into acceptableness, that makes a bit more sense, if you know what I mean. And bases the team a bit, you know, probably lowers the expectations a bit more realistically. We will talk about the Wigan game then. Let's kind of get out of the way. Well, let's hear from Mark Bowen on the Barnsley game, because certainly he had a lot to answer for the Wigan game. So let's talk about that once we've heard from him.
We talked about it. Enough said about it, really, on Wednesday's situation. It was more important, not so much the performance today, as getting a win. Getting the win on the board to calm things down with people. And listen, it's clear, anybody who's here watching the game, we're not flowing like we can. You know, in our passing movements and whatever, it's a bit fractious at times. So it was important that we made the right decisions on the day, that we did the right things, that we were professional. You know, getting a little bit of a scrappy goal, settle people down a little bit. You know, and at half-time saying to the lads, look, you know, you've got to be professional now, see the game out. I'm delighted, of course, again, with a clean sheet again. You know, defence was solid. Matt Miazga's been out for 6 weeks and came in, looked as if he'd never been away. Full credit to him and to the staff, you know, rehab staff behind him to get him that state coming in for his first game. So, yeah, tonight now, yeah, we can, you know, I don't like going in the dressing room and screaming and shouting at players and banging heads together. So it's nice to go in after the game and say, you know, well done, lads, well done. We've got the 3 points and we can move, what I've been saying from the first day we walked in the club, hopefully move onwards and upwards now and put it to bed and concentrate on other things with a big game on Tuesday.
We spoke about George Puskás a minute ago and obviously his goal and his role in the Barnsley win, Sim. He was conspicuous in his absence in the Wigan game. And the first thing that was a bit of an interesting decision was Mark Bowen deciding not to bring him off the bench when Reading were obviously doing pretty badly. Two subs were brought on at half-time with the score at 1-0. The subs obviously didn't have the desired impact and Reading fell 2-0, then obviously lost 3-0 in the last minute. Mark Bowen has said afterwards that game that he didn't fancy bringing Puskás on because 20 minutes of playing him off the bench could have ruined him for Saturday. I can get the logic behind that, but it kind of sums up the Wigan game for me. The reason I'm bringing it up is because we did kind of just give up, basically. It feels to me like, anyway, in the second half, when it wasn't going our way, Puskás wasn't brought on for this 20 minutes, which could apparently have hurt him. Therefore, why should he have been on the bench? And we very, very much gave up for the third goal, as you spoke about earlier. Liam Moore in particular, just kind of stopping and Reading consigning themselves to a 3-0 defeat that really has to go down as well. That's certainly the worst performance of the season.
Yeah, just on that Puskás thing, it was bizarre, to be honest, because Bowen basically said after the game that Puskás wasn't fit enough to come on. And even when Reading are 1-0 down or 2-0 down, if Puskás isn't fit enough to be risked in that situation, then when do you bring him on? You're not going to bring on
Puskás. When is he ever going to be worth it, sort of thing?
Exactly. That if you're going to put a striker onto the bench when he's not fully fit enough for one specific scenario when you might use him, I don't know that we didn't go through that scenario against Wigan, basically, that we needed someone like Puskás to come on and turn the game or maybe get on the end of a chance or something like that. And it was bizarre, really. Luckily, Bowen's blushes were basically spared by Puskás scoring at the weekend and essentially justifying his decision not to bring Puskás on against Wigan. But on the basis of the Wigan game itself, it was utterly bizarre. Tactically against Wigan, it was poor as well. Bowen, in the last couple of weeks before the Wigan game had kind of gone more of a 4-2-3-1, assumed that he would basically do the same thing against Wigan, but for some reason went 4-4-2, which was a drastic change away from what we'd already had. And then, as you say, at half-time, he brought on two substitutes, basically had Swift and Adam playing deep in the centre of midfield, and they're great passers of the ball, great creative players for us, but what they do not provide is defensive solidity. And when you're already 1-0 down, you do need to have an eye on what the opposition can do. And if you leave yourself open, if you don't give yourself that protection, there's every chance they're going to get that second goal and basically kill the game. So from Bowen's point of view, it's poor tactical decision in the first place. And it's a bizarrely over-the-top reaction at half-time that went a decent way to basically killing off our chances.
Now, with this Wigan game, as I said at the start of the show, my lack of general fitness, I suppose, and also my availability over the last week has meant that I wasn't there and I haven't really seen much more than the highlights. And therefore, as someone who hasn't been, you know, everybody's been to the game and I've spoken to has told me it was an absolute shambles, and I completely accept that. But I will say, as the devil's advocate question, Wigan are currently third in the form table. They beat West Brom away on the weekend, having beaten us. They scored, you've got to say that certainly, you know, taking the third goal out of the equation for what happened there. The first two goals were really good finishes, particularly the first. It's a lovely flick heel, back heel finish. Therefore, is there an argument to be made that Wigan, therefore, a better team that we kind of give them credit for in the form they're in at the moment? And therefore, maybe it's just looks a bit worse than it actually is in this game.
You certainly can accept that Wigan were a good side. They played well, restricted Reading really well, frustrated us really well. The point about the form is absolutely fair too. But Reading were absolutely atrocious, and I'm sorry you've had to get the beeper out for that, but
the clown noise will be deployed.
I really need to emphasize just how utterly dreadful Reading were, and anyone who went to the match will I'm sure agree with me. Reading didn't have any ideas, they didn't have any fight, didn't have any basically any basic sense that they wanted to win the game or that they didn't want to lose it in an embarrassing fashion. And the fact that I'm still deeply frustrated about that, even after a win at the weekend, I think says a lot about how utterly dreadful and dire it was. And we went through so many different adjectives on the Tylerson in the days after, trying to describe how bad it was: dreadful, dire, atrocious, awful, the whole lot of it. And to be honest, it's the kind of performance that could well have basically put us on the way to relegation. It was that bad in terms of the, not just in terms of how bad the performance was and how much it kind of said about the team and about Bowen, but it really, really deeply turned the fans against Bowen himself, in terms of his approach to the game, in terms of how badly Reading had played, and his reaction after it as well. Not just that thing with Puskás, but a general kind of seemingly him washing his hands of any responsibility. He laid into his players, quite rightly, to be fair, because the team were absolutely abysmal against Wigan, and we can't hide from that. But he still played a big role himself in terms of his tactics. And I had worried that could really kind of altogether really been a bit of a ruiner for us this season, and luckily we managed to react against Barnsley, but if we hadn't, we could be in a really bad place at the minute.
Well, that is my final question of the recap, and it really is that as you look at the table now, I mean, Middlesbrough are currently losing, so hopefully stay where they are, but with 10 games to go, an 8-point gap, 3 points gets us to 12th, and you know we've got a 3-point buffer with plus goal difference to the one place below us, 17th. Is the relegation question now cured with that Barnsley win? Obviously, you know, if we'd have lost it, we'd be much more teetering. But does it just for at least the next few weeks, or even for the season, do you think, get us over the line and just think it is just that 1 week we had to kind of fret ourselves a little bit.
Reading still just need to keep on picking up points, because we've been in a situation in the last couple of weeks where 1 minute it seemed like Reading are absolutely fine and we're not going to get relegated. I think we were something like 11 points clear not that long ago, but one result or two results going against us, particularly in as bad a way as the Wigan game, can make it suddenly look like we're in the middle of a relegation battle. And then you get a win against Barnsley and everything seems fine. Reading base just need to keep their calm, keep going, and believe that if they get these a few more wins to keep their heads above water, they'll be absolutely fine. And if they do that, there's not really too many worries to be had. It's just don't panic and don't have another game like Wigan, basically.
Yeah, I must say five more points to 50 really should be enough. And I think that you look at the fixtures we got coming up. I think we got a more than a good enough chance of getting that in the next few weeks, and then hopefully we'll be more than safe with a few weeks to go, and that will cure any relegation fears. I do think we'll look back on that Wigan game as the blip rather than the forebearing sign. So let's move on to some mailbag. We've got a little, not too much mailbag, not too much news bites, but then we do have a massive game to preview at the end of the show. So let's move on now and get into the mailbag.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Matthew Williamson starts us off this week then. He says, does Bowen get the credit for going back to the Sheffield, the setup rather, versus Sheffield Wednesday? Or does he get the negative that he went away from it in the first place? This is kind of as you were saying earlier, Sim, for the 4-4-2. I'm inclined to say from this position that he should have to take a bit of criticism for moving away from, it wasn't necessarily a winning system, it was a decent enough system, but if you're going to move away from a system that has picked up points and not been too bad over the last few weeks, to pick a system where you play your defensive midfielder at right mid and you're not a winger midfielder at left mid with, you know, there's not as the game plan unfolded, not too much going on in the middle as well. I think the manager has to take a bit of a hit for really moving into that system, because on paper it looks pretty poor, and on practice it certainly was as well.
Yeah, he absolutely does. It was just a massive, just far too big a change, basically. The only reason that I can really think that he's gone to that 4-4-2 is, it is something that I've thought for a little while now, that he seems to want to basically shoehorn Reading into a two-man strike force. It's something we saw a couple of weeks ago where Reading went to a 3-5-2, and I don't think most of the side kind of really fitted into a 3-5-2 very well. It was around about the time that Puskás wasn't really working as a lone striker, obviously didn't for quite a while. And we went with Mate and Baldock up top. In that case, in a 3-5-2. Seemingly just trying to get two men up top. This time we've gone for a 4-4-2, changing away from the 4-2-3-1 to do it, really, really messing up the midfield, basically, to try and do it, as you say, putting Araruna out on the right, Ejaria on the left. Too much change to facilitate one tactical idea, i.e. two up top. He would have been a lot better suited by basically making minimal changes, just swapping out Puskás for either Baldock or Mate. It wouldn't have been ideal. I don't think either are as good as lone strikers as Puskás is, but it still would have allowed Reading to basically keep much of the same shape that they did against Sheffield Wednesday, as Matt says. But when Reading went back to it, as we creditably did against Barnsley, we responded pretty well and looked a lot more fluent because of it.
Yeah, I think this is the problem. For me, the issue is with the strikers and trying to shoehorn them into a two-man is that even if the service has to be impeccable, obviously you always want that, but there is a sense for me that there isn't much to hit, especially with Mate and Baldock. Mate is not someone you can really play off outside the box. Inside the box, I think he's a very good player, but outside, I don't think he is. Baldock is a much better player away from home when he can chase people. Puskas is, you know, we've gone over and over again the sort of problems he has. And then obviously you're talking about players like Danny Loader who haven't got much form at the moment. And therefore, if you're playing two or one, it's almost like neither really has a system at the moment. So which is it better to stick with the one? I suppose in a way you can stick with the one and then just say, well, we've got five midfielders, that's one more midfielder, therefore that's better, if you know what I mean. Do you think that that's effectively why we should stick with a one-man strike force at the moment? Because it's not worth having to, because there aren't two good enough strikers.
Yeah, it suits a lot more of the team. It allows us to use people like Rinomhota, Ajara and Swift in their more natural positions rather than having to move them around all over the place. But also with Puskas, he's someone that is young, is going to improve, obviously hasn't been consistent enough, hasn't been good enough on the whole so far, but he is improving. And if you keep on giving him that game time in a lone striker role that he can play, and he's getting a lot better at it, you could see that his hold-up play was a lot better on Saturday. If you keep on giving him those opportunities, he's not going to be ideal at all times, but he is going to improve, he is going to get better, and it's going to pay off in the long run. I don't know what we learn in the long run, what we improve on in the long run by playing Mate and Baldock up top. It might be, even if it is effective or isn't in the short term, I don't think it is effective in the short term, but how do we benefit in the long run? I don't see it. So you play Puskas up top, you let him improve and hopefully reap the rewards later down the line.
Quick add-on question from Matt as well. He says, did we go defensive too early against Barnsley in the second half? What's your sort of thoughts on that? Did Reading kind of camp in a little bit too much against Barnsley? It's a sort of team, I mean, their waveform isn't too special, but they have picked up they've got a reasonable amount of threat. Mark Bowen does also have a bit of a tendency to be happy to park the bus, I guess.
I think he understandably just thought 3 points were the most important thing. And when you've got a one goal lead, and it's a side that is probably quite low on confidence, obviously a little bit better because they're winning, basically. But even then, they're still not in a great place because of the Wigan game. And the crucial thing is reacting. The crucial thing is getting the 3 points. And if the best way of doing that is to park the bus, basically, at home to Barnsley, then that's what we got to do. Barnsley had some worrying openings in the first half. Morrison coming up with a really bad error, a beater as well. Generally, Reading not really having the ability to close down space in front of their back four well enough. Swift wasn't really that kind of solid defensive midfielder to really protect the defence, and put it all together, and I guess parking the bus was basically the surefire way to see out the win, and luckily it worked. But I guess if Reading had conceded a scrappy goal, it didn't look too likely. Barnsley had a lot of shots but didn't really open us up. But if they had got that goal, then we would very likely have been berating the decision to go park the bus in the second half right now, but luckily it did work.
Yeah, I suppose that is the thing. You cannot argue with results to some degree. However, Sam Richards, then, with the other question for this week's mailbag. He says, I think we've been very poor at home since Bowen took over. A real lack of ideas and intensity in the play. I don't see it changing anytime soon. I've seen lots of fans suggesting Wednesday against Wigan was a blip, but for me, it was a long time coming at home. Now, the stats, and I think they tell a very interesting story with the stats, because we're 10th, actually, in the league from 14th of October when Bowen came in terms of home form, with 6 wins from 13, 17 goals, which is not too impressive, probably like lower mid-table, conceding 13, which is pretty bang average, 20 points. So it's 7 points from the top and 7 points from the bottom in terms of how many we've picked up at home since Bowen took over, which paints a good picture. But I think the thing here, Sim, is that we've won 6, so that's a good amount, you know, as I say, pretty much worthy of being 10th. However, we've lost 5, which only one team has lost more than 5 at home in the period since Bowen's taken over. And I suppose that's the thing that I mean, I'm not saying it's incorrect to say that we've not been good enough at home, but the stats do suggest that we have been good enough for the, you know, what we're kind of aiming for, I guess. But because we're losing games, and you know, it's almost all or nothing, isn't it? We have a win against Barnsley, everyone's kind of happy, but we've had the loss against Wigan, and rather than that being a 1-1 draw, which, you know, you can brush off or whatever, we've ended up having to deal with a massive change in sort of in atmosphere, and you know, I suppose with the Birmingham game as well is a bit of a shock defeat. What's your sort of impression of the home form? Because as I say, the stats paint a pretty interesting picture.
When we're playing at home, I think it kind of feels like we're coming up with different systems each week to try and unlock a defence. Obviously, it's different challenges. We've had some very different games at home under Bowen. We've played much weaker sides like Barnsley and Luton, no disrespect to them. But we've also lost out quite narrowly to West Brom and Leeds, who obviously very good signs, top two in the division. But what runs through that for me is a lack of a consistent idea of how to break teams down. And it's basically one thing to rely on people like Ajara and Swift, and obviously Zhao earlier as that target man who can bring others into play. But we struggle to get real pace and creativity out wide, basically. I don't think it's necessarily a case of someone like Barrow or McCleary, someone really quick who's going to kind of hug the touch line and really try and stretch the play in an orthodox way. But whatever kind of winger it is, just someone who can have those extra ideas in the final third that at the minute we don't have. And I don't think our fullbacks are so good offensively they can compensate for that. Yeardom's good at it, and I really like his driving runs up the pitch, but he's not so good that he can kind of take the role of a winger at the same time. And it's something we really need to look at in the summer, just getting that extra type of creativity, basically, that extra kind of idea to unlock a defence. And hopefully we'll have something similar to that with Masika coming into the side. He's really quick, really positive. And on Saturday, he made more dribbles than anyone else on the pitch, despite only being on it for about 20 minutes, which says a lot about how he loves to run at defenders, which is basically what we need, I think. And he's a lot quicker. He's a lot more kind of zippy, basically, than Reading's other options in the side at the minute, a lot more direct. And if we can get him on the ball, then hopefully that gives us a kind of change of pace and a little bit of unpredictability to really make the most out of the spaces that other players in the team can make.
Yeah, I suppose that's the kind of the difficulty that Bowen has, to be fair to him, in that all of our best players and our best attacking players are, generally speaking, central, not too quick. Obviously, Ajaria is a very skillful player, but, you know, you think Swift, Adam, Rinamota, they're good players, but they're not going to flick the switch, as it were, which we need. And the strikers aren't, as we've spoken earlier about, aren't the best in the world. There aren't any wingers. So Masika has hopefully a role to play in that, and a role to play in bringing the ball out. And when you have more options at home, that is better. And as if your options are predominantly ball-playing midfielders, you need someone to play the ball to. And that's a lot of the entertainment value comes from having that outlet that hopefully Mark Bowen it might just be one that we deal with after the summer, or it might be one we come up with in the next few weeks. Hopefully the sooner the better. We'll talk about what's going to be coming up in the next day as we record on Monday night, the Sheffield United game and big match preview, shortly after some news bites.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Not too much news then, as one can imagine from this week being pretty heavy on the games, but we do have a new contract for Josh Hewitt, the academy player, so congratulations to him for signing his first professional deal. And the under-23s have been in action tonight, away to Aston Villa in the Premier League 2 Div 2. 3-1 win for Reading in the Midlands. Ryan East, Danny Loder and Oliver Pendlebury on the score sheet. So congratulations to them. They are completed their Premier League Cup group with a 2-2 draw against Charlton. Before that, Augustus McGiff scoring, and Joseph Ojoze, the new signing from Port Vale, scoring for them. We have Everton in the last 16. That takes place on Sunday, March the 8th. And then on the 11th of March, we have the Barks and Bucks Cup quarterfinal on the road in Marlow at the Alfred Davis Memorial Ground. So anyone wanting to get themselves down to Marlow for a bit of under-23s versus seniors action, do very much do that. In the under-18s, nothing really going on. They're on a bit of a break now until March the 14th when they play Arsenal. They're currently ninth in the Premier League, and the women as well are on a big international break with the She Believes Cup. Lots of Reading players involved in that, but that means they don't play now until Brighton on March the 22nd. So that is a news bites, as I said, is a quick one. And now we go into big match preview for that massive game on Tuesday night.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Sheffield United, it is then on Tuesday night, 8 o'clock at the Mad Stad. It is the last 16 of the FA Cup. It is, well, it's the game we've been dreaming of, I suppose, Sim. It's that sort of a cherry on the top of a cake sort of occasion that we might have ahead of us. I remember the famous last 16 game with West Brom when Steve Clarke took us that far in the FA Cup a few years ago. It was one of, I think it was voted our moment of the season, actually, or moment of the year as it came to the end of year podcast awards. Such was the magnitude that these games can bring. And really the first question that we have to ask ourselves for hosting one of the Premier League's best away teams is, are we prepared? And do you have faith that this Reading team has an upset in them?
I have no idea, basically. It's going to say a lot about the character of this side, basically, if they can bring themselves up to this occasion. I don't really know, to be honest. We've seen Mark Bowen's Reading really step up to tougher games before. You look at how much we were in games against Leeds home and away, West Brom at home as well. We came up with some pretty good tactics, I would say, to counter the opposition. But can we push that up to such a level that we're able to take on Sheffield United? I have no idea, basically. But we're going to have to rely on our key players as well. Swift, Ajari, we can't afford them to have off days. If we're going to get at Sheffield United, we need them to be on it, basically. And we'll learn a lot about how they're able to basically turn up on the big occasions.
Well, this is the thing. Who do we bring in and who do we take out? Because if you look at the players, is Liam Moore going to come back in? I think it's really difficult to turn around to Matt Miazga now and say, well, you kept a clean sheet against Barnsley. And maybe it is the case that Liam Moore was meant to play that game. Maybe it was the case that he was, you know, properly ill and everything. But if he's not, then it's very hard to bring him back. Elise is the other one I want to ask about, because the inexperienced player, he has a bit of magic in him, but he is becoming what I would describe as a more sort of 6.5 out of 10 industrious player at the moment at this point in his career, because he has the energy and he has a lot of tactical discipline, which I really rate as well, and he's a very good player. So is he actually better suited to this game as a result? Rinomota starting ahead of Pele, maybe both of them. Tyler Blackett could come in at left back and have Jordan Obito at left wing. What do you do for the team? Do you think that you just effectively keep it as simple as you can and play the same team we did against Barnsley?
I think it's going to be a case of very specific tactics, basically. And Sheffield United, I presume they're going to play the same back three that they tend to do. And we might have to match him up because of that. And you mentioned Moore there. Maybe he can come back in alongside Miazga and Morrison. Obviously, a system we played before this season and have had some success with it. But then if you're going to go with that system, maybe then we're talking about going back to two up top, as I said earlier, and maybe we have the players for that. Maybe we don't. I'd imagine it would be more likely to be Baldock and Puskás rather than Mate and Puskás. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be very specific, very very tailor-made tactics. I don't think we can really kind of preview just yet. Just on Elise, thought he was really mature at Leeds a couple of weeks ago, and if he can settle into an occasion like that, then there's every chance he could do the same against Sheffield United. He's certainly not one to get kind of overshadowed by a big occasion, and hopefully he can have a similarly good effect against Sheffield United.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's about sort of being able to every player is going to have to make an effect and make an impact, because we can't carry any sort of passengers in this game, because Sheffield United, are you confident Sheffield United will play a full team? They didn't play on the weekend. So that's going to figure as well. And really, I suppose with that in mind, it does kind of feel like the odds are stacked against us in this one.
Yeah, but I think that's good, to be honest. We strive on things like that, and you look back at the best memories that Reading have had in the Cup in the last couple of years, it's been in these kind of games when we've really been up against it, and it gives the crowd something to get behind as well. It's something that we've not really been used to recently, having a big crowd on a big cup night, and hopefully that's something the team can play into, having a bigger backing behind them, and hopefully a louder backing behind them as well, and hopefully we can play up to that occasion.
Well, we'll have Club 1871 in full voice in the South Stand as well, which is always a bit of a bonus, with Sheffield United only having half of the stand, which they did have the option for the full lot as Cardiff took. So hopefully that is going to help us along the way. And really, it's going to be, you know, hopefully it's one that Reading can settle into very quickly. And the longer this game lasts at 0-0, I think the more confidence I have of us nicking a late goal. And it's going to be a nervy night, in the basis that there's no replay as well. So it has to end on Tuesday night. There has to be an entrant into the quarterfinals. And but it's just going to be one of those nights, I think, Sim, that's going to be a bit nervy. But hopefully we can bring out that sort of nerve and release the energy with a bit of atmosphere and everything. And with that in mind, it's not going to count towards our prediction league. But where are you going to say as a result for this Sheffield United game?
I've got a feeling it's going to go quite similar to maybe the Palace or the Everton Cup games from a couple of years ago, where Reading have, for the most part, been in the game, are going to match the opposition quite well. But I don't think we're going to just have that quality to see it through. And we're not going to get embarrassed or anything like that, but I think we're going to lose it by a goal or two. So I'm going to go with 2-1 to Sheffield United, and I've got a feeling that Puskas is going to score again.
So I think I'm going to go 1-1 for the Sheffield United game. I completely agree that Puskas, I think he's the big game player who has the potential to get on the score sheet. But I think, you know, I'm certainly not going to go about predicting penalties, but I do think it could go the distance, maybe with Reading scoring first. And then, yeah, I think Sheffield United do certainly have a goal in them. And maybe, you know, maybe the later it lasts 0-0, the more it will suit us. And hopefully as the nervy night goes, that energy can be, that tension can be released as positive energy and an atmosphere and bringing Reading towards the goal, because it does have to end on a Tuesday night with extra time and penalties. And the prediction league, just before we go to run down that, nobody got Wigan. As you can imagine, that's a complete whitewash. Nothing there. Barnsley, myself, Wim, Handbags and Sim all picked up a point. So I'm on 31 out in the lead with Sim 22. Johnny Williams, he did get the Leeds defeat on 19. Wim, who also got the Leeds defeat bang on, is on 17. Ollie 16, Westy 15 and Handbags 11. So that just about wraps up episode 223 of the Tyler Sim podcast. Sim, thank you very much for popping by.
Thanks very much for having me and for letting me talk about a win finally at home.
Well, yes, certainly Reading FC do need a win at home to ignite this season once again on Tuesday night, with Sheffield United up in the cup, and hopefully Reading will be in good voice and produce a big game performance that we've all been craving for this season. We'll be back next week to review that game, and we'll obviously be back in the league duty as well with Reading going to Birmingham on Saturday. So we'll be back to talk about that in about a week's time. Thank you very much for listening. Get down the mad cell on Tuesday night, bring your best fine voices, and hopefully we can find ourselves in the last eight of the FA Cup once again, which is a pleasing thing to say as our cup form has improved over the last few years. Until then, thank you very much for listening, and come on your ass.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always be.